Okay, we bring this meeting to order, the Environment, Natural Resources, and Ag Finance Committee, and look for somebody to approve the notes. Representative Pennis, will you move to approve
I would be happy to, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pennis moves to approve the notes for the minutes of the meeting for March 16, 2005. Without objection, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, the first we have up is Representative Davids, your E85 pump bill. Do you have any amendments or just taken off on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to describe the bill. I don't have any amendments. I'm not aware if there are any.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 1306 is a bill that would appropriate $500,000 to help promote the installation of E85 pumps. This goes in very close, really goes hand in hand with Senate File 4 that's moving through the process that would have the state go to a 20% ethanol mandate. Now, there's two ways on that bill to get to the 20%. One is through the increased use of E85. If we get to a 20% average, then the law would stay the way it is. If not, by December 31st of 2010, if we don't make that 20% average, then by the way the bill reads right now, by the year 2015, I believe it is, we would go to an E10 mandate to an E20 mandate. So this would help go to the 20% average for ethanol usage a great deal. As I said in the bill, one way to get there is to increase use of E85, but we have a problem, and it's a problem that this bill would help solve. We have about 120 E85 pumps across the state of Minnesota right now, about 120 to 130,000 E85 flexible fuel vehicles. But, in fact, we have, that's about three times as many E85 pumps in Minnesota as the rest of the country has, so we're way ahead of the game there. But if we were to make the E20 mandate, or not the E20 mandate, but the 20% ethanol mandate by the year 2010, we really do need House File 1306 to pass because we need more E85 pumps across the state. There's, I think, 26 or so in the metro area. There's about 30 in the Wilmer-Benson area because they have a very aggressive plant in Benson that has promoted this. So simply what this bill does, it says it's up to a maximum of $15,000 per E85 pump. There's, if I could, Mr. Chairman, we have several folks who would like to testify. One is, who I'd really like to testify here, is Sandy Nieren, who represents the auto manufacturers in support of House File 1306. And I've been very appreciative of that. So I've got Sandy Nieren here, and then Tim Gerlach from the American Lung Association. Bob Krogman's here to answer questions if the committee would like. And I'm not sure if there's anyone else here to testify. I mean, it has the support of the corn growers, Farm Bureau, Farmers Union, and most importantly, Sandy Nieren. Oh.
Representative David, if you'd let me move your bill first, the chair will move House File 1306 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill.
Thank you, Mr.
Mm-hmm.
Chair.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sandy Nieren. I'm here on behalf of the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers, which is a trade association of nine of the world's largest car and light truck manufacturers. And we do very, very strongly support Representative David's bill. I hope that doesn't do it any harm by saying that we actually support this bill. But our position has been fairly consistent all session long and since last fall that we do strongly encourage voluntary efforts to increase ethanol use in Minnesota. In fact, Ford Motor Company and some others have been active in the E85 coalition here in Minnesota. I think Ford Motor Company has, on their own, already contributed the same amount of money that Representative Davids is proposing here. They have contributed over $500,000 to help give grants to local service stations to install E85 pumps. So I won't say anything else other than we do strongly support any voluntary efforts to help us get there.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. And your next?
Yes. And Mr. Chair, in all fairness to the auto manufacturers, they have been very clear throughout my tour of the legislature with Senate File 4 and saying they do not oppose ethanol. They do have some concerns about Senate File 4 that we've been working on. The door has been open to them. So I'm very happy to have the auto manufacturers on board on House File 1306.
Good morning. You give your name for the record and begin.
Yes, sir. My name is Tim Durlock. I'm Director of Outdoor Air Programs at the American Lung Association of Minnesota. As many of you know, the Lung Association has been a partner and a coordinator of the Minnesota E85 project since the late 1990s. This public-private coalition includes the U.S. Department of Energy, Ford Motor Company, as Ms. Naren has mentioned, has been a part of it, and several local or Minnesota partners, including Minnesota Corn Growers, the Departments of Commerce, Agriculture, Office of Environmental Assistance, and the National Ethanol Vehicle Coalition. We've been successful in installing or converting nearly 110 service stations across the state, which is, from the perspective of many people, a success. However, I must remind everyone that we have 3,000 service stations, or what they call gas stations, in the state. If we are serious about taking E85 to the next step of development, we're going to need incentives. Retailers can sell these same vehicles gasoline today, and the vast majority of those vehicles run on gasoline today. To install E85 equipment can be quite easy. It can be a low-cost conversion, or to install new equipment can run in the neighborhood of $50,000 and anywhere in between those two amounts. Other states like Kansas, Colorado, and just recently the state of Illinois has announced a program that, which is very similar to this bill. So there's something like 30 different states around the country that have some type of incentive to encourage this kind of activity. So just on behalf of the American Lung Association and our E85 team, I would ask for your support of this bill.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Representative Johnson, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davids, how many pumps are we talking about then with this 500,000? Are you predicting?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Johnson, if you take, you can go up to 50% of the total cost for the maximum 15,000. So 500,000 divided by 15,000 would be, what would that be?
33
more pumps, which would be very helpful, if that's the right math.
And that came from Representative Junkie, didn't it? 33.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Representative Junkie. Thank you.
Any more questions? Representative Wagenius.
So pleased to see Chairman Davids here this morning.
After yesterday. Yes.
Yeah. I have another witness.
Do you have an army of them?
I was nice to you.
I'm going to be equally nice to you. But I am sitting here wondering, here we're working on protecting folks' air, and of course, you know, I'm thinking about protecting folks' water. And one of the things we could do to help folks in outstate Minnesota is to, particularly ones in areas that are vulnerable to contamination, where they have wells that are vulnerable to contamination, is to have some matching program to have folks be able to check their wells for pollutants, particularly when they have high nitrate levels. I mean, this is the Environment Committee after all. When they have high nitrate levels, that's a big clue of a well that is susceptible. So I would hope you would think about splitting this money or doubling it and having half of it go to helping folks who want to check their wells. That was nice.
Mr. Chair,
are we on the hearing bill
here? Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, yes, thank you, and your point is very well taken. Now, in the county I live in, you can take the samples in right now and have them tested the well water from the farm wells. And I'm not sure what the funding mechanism is for that, but a lot of people during the county fair bring in their water. And
that's only for nitrates.
That's just for nitrates?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I certainly, myself, don't have any problem with an amendment or another bill going through with someone to, you know, to put some more funding in for checking well water for other pesticides or chemicals or herbicides or whatever they might be.
Perhaps we should co-author it.
That'd be cool.
An anomaly. I must have missed something. I don't wear on the ethanol bill here.
No, you haven't.
Any other questions?
Not to the author, but I have questions. Or not to the witness.
You had a question for Representative David?
Mm-hmm. If we're done with the witness, I just had a question on the bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have one more witness I'm aware of, unless I'm missing somebody, with a brief statement.
Do you want to ask your question now?
I'll wait till the witness.
Okay, but whatever. Go ahead, Representative David, ask your witness to come.
Okay. I have Mr. Bob Krogman here from the Minnesota Petroleum Retailers who would like to just make a few comments.
And Doc Hunter.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Krogman. I'm with the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. We own and operate as a group 1,700 to 2,000 of the state's 35 to 3,700 convenience stores and service stations. Most of those are outside of the metro area, the biggest majority of them. We support the bill. Don't have any prepared comments. I would answer any questions.
He can stay there if he wants.
Mr. Krogman, you know what the rack price is today at Sam's Club in Mankato?
$54.
Mr. Chairman, I do not.
That's a private joke. Representative Junkie, go ahead.
Thank you, and Mr. both witnesses can stay there for these questions, perhaps. Representative Davids, I'm not against your bill, certainly, but I do have some questions on how it would work. Reading the bill, it's fairly straightforward. I guess my first question would be up to $15,000 per pump. How many pumps per station or per owner of stations does that mean? Because, and the reason I'm asking, I'm not accusing Mr. Krogman's members of being underhanded in any way, but right now it just says putting in E85 pumps, and it doesn't say how long they have to be E85. I mean, you can literally empty that first tank and now put in regular gas or anything else. Doesn't say just one per station. Maybe I'm building a new station. I put in two or three E85 pumps, or at least I say they are, get reimbursement for them, and now I can put whatever I want in them later. So there's no, you know what I'm getting at. I think we need to somehow figure out it's one per station. You have to have E85 in it for what period of time. Otherwise, we're just paying for pumps and tanks for people for diesel or anything else they want to put in.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Davis, go ahead.
For the record, it would be my intent, and we can work on some language, because I'm hoping this gets later for possible inclusion. Two points. One is, it would be my intention to be one per station, location, not per owner. Gentleman or a lady might own five or six stations. It would be one per location. And I'd also like some language in there saying this is E85 for, like, forever. I don't think you put forever in there, but long time or... Mm-hmm.
Right. And Mr. Chair, I think that's good. Mm-hmm. We are going to have to work that out. I just want to give a heads up. The other question I have, which, again, maybe your witness can help us with, too, because he knows very well that a lot of the gas station owners in my area that already have these pumps have been good stewards, have put in E85. And the first question I'm going to get, and you know it is, what's in it for me? I've been doing it already. How come I didn't get anything to convert my premium pumps to E85 pumps? Is there some spiff for me? I've been doing this for years now.
Representative Davis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Duckett, I believe if you asked them, I believe they did get a spiff to put those in from the Benson plant. Now, I don't know if all of them did, but I know some of them were paid a certain amount of money to put them in, and then they negotiated a deal where they have to be 20 cents less than, I think, 87% octane or whatever it is.
Maybe.
But my guess is most of them already did.
Does Mr. Krogman know? I mean, besides even the ones in my area,
Mr.
around the state, there's even pump in Duluth. I mean, did people get money to put those in?
Mr. Krogman.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Junkie, I've talked to several folks about this and other bills that do this. I would say the majority of pumps that have been put in have been put in with an arrangement with the Lung Association, with the Benson plant. Yeah. I think most of them have been put in through a program where they did get some dollars to put the pump and tank in. Most of those, by the way, to your previous comment, do have a set time. It has to be E85. I think it's 5 to 10 years in there.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
The Minnesota E85
team, your name again?
Oh, Tim Gerlach with the Lung Association. Again, the Lung Association administers the grant funds that we've had to date. We'll seek grants from the U.S. Department of Energy, Minnesota Corn Growers, foundations, anywhere we can find them. The vast majority of the pumps that are in operation today have received some sort of grant. It may be as small as $1,000 to do a simple conversion, which might only cost a couple hundred dollars to do, but in most cases, a high volume or an urban location is going to cost upwards of $30,000 to $50,000. In those cases, those station owners have received half the funds or some percentage. And the agreement is a forgivable loan, which can run from 24 months for a small amount up to about 4 years for the larger sum.
Representative Junkie.
Thank you. And so then my follow-up question to that would be, here it says install pumps for E85. What if my stations are just converting, again, say a premium pump or a diesel pump or something else? They already have the pump, the tank. They're just converting, so they're not having that $30,000 to $50,000 cost. It's simply emptying the tank and maybe cleaning it, making a conversion, and that's it. Buying a new handle, you know. I don't know what's involved, but it certainly isn't the whole digging in a new tank, putting in a new pump. And in fact, that's how a lot of these stations, they're finding they sell more volume of E85 than they are of premium. And when they come to an agreement with your jobbers and others, they remove the premium, put in the E85 in the existing. Do they get anything for converting that, Mr. Chair? And this bill, I don't think, allows that, and it should maybe.
Representative David?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a big believer in conversions, and I think that we should put language in to allow some, maybe a 50% if the conversion is $2,000, maybe 50, you know, apply for 50% of that. I've got some other folks I need to talk to about that, but that seems very reasonable to me.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I hope Mr. Rankin's writing all these ideas down as we go so we can do something as it comes. My last question for now, Mr. Chair, and again, with the American Lung Association, and my question is, in here, again, it's for the Commissioner of Agriculture to dole out these grants. Would it be smarter to have a pass-through through the Commissioner to the Lung Association, who's already been doing this and is geared up to give these grants, as opposed to creating, you know, I'm sure the Ag Department is going to want to take a cut of this for administering the grants. I don't know what the cost is, a fiscal note for the department. I'm just thinking out loud, if there's someone already doing this, you know, maybe they should be the fiscal agent and a pass-through through the department. And I guess I'd ask the American Lung what they thought of that. If they've been administering these grants now, would this be a burden to just add to the pot and continue?
Mr. Gerla.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, on behalf of the Lung Association, we could do that. We have the ability to take funds and try and leverage them. Say if the state was putting in a dollar, we could perhaps find a dollar in from the federal side or another location. The Department of Agriculture is a partner of ours as well, so whatever mechanism might be worked out, we'd be willing to work with.
Representative Magnus, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I understand from the testifiers also, it's my understanding that the majority of these that are using these now are the, what we call the cooperatives, in the cooperative system, and basically are farmer-owned, for lack of better terms, stations that have put in and worked it out in agreement with your organization, Mr. Gerlach. But it's also my understanding, and maybe Mr. Krogman could comment on this if he would, that if you have a franchise, if you're a franchisee with one of the major petroleum franchises, you have to, I think you have to sign an agreement, you'll have three grades of gasoline you would sell. So you've got three pumps already. Now, you've got premium, or the good stuff, you've got a mid-grade, and you got the poor stuff. And my question is, how much would you estimate is the mid-grade selling for, and have you approached those major franchisers to an agreement to just say, let's do away with the... First answer my mid-grade question, if you would.
Mr. Krogman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, you're correct. If you're a branded retailer, you usually sign a 5 to 10 year contract for supply of gasoline, putting up the logo, clearing credit cards. And that contract almost always requires you carry three grades of gasoline and it be three grades of the branded supplier's gasoline. taking one of those out, putting in E85 would violate that contract, you'd lose your sign. So that, have we approached them? No. Those are national contracts. If you're a ConocoPhillips jobber in Minnesota, you get the same contract as a ConocoPhillips jobber in Texas. And those are standard in all the branded contracts.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Krugman, do you have any estimates, rough idea on what percent of sales are for each of those grades of gasoline?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, it's very location dependent, but I think an overall number, mid-grade will be in the area of 5 to 8%. Premium will be in the summer, be in the area of 5-6%. In the winter, it'll go up to 8 to 10%. In the winter, people will buy a higher premium or a higher octane gasoline. But unleaded, the 87 grade will run from 70 to 80% at every location, and 85 to 90% at some. Premiums and mid grades are a much lesser sale than folks actually expect. They think they run 20-25%, but they both run less than 10, from what I'm told from our members.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as a follow-up then to Mr. Gerlach in the author, have you approached those major franchisers about just replacing, for example, their mid-grade, if their mid-grade sales are 5, 6, 7%, have you approached them with some sort of plan for incentives to get them to replace that with, say, an E85?
Representative David?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Magnus. I have not. In the bill, will probably look much different than it does right now, but the way the bill is now, it would be for that additional pump. It would be for that additional pump. So we're not looking at getting into the contracts and trying to change that. That could be a lengthy process. Not saying it couldn't be looked at, but I have not.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, I think it's important to realize that at any location there could be a variety of systems, pumps, and configurations. We have gone into stations that have been able to pull one of their dispensers off of their current free product system and put E85 in place of, say, mid-grade at a multi-product dispenser. We have standalone dispensers, and we have those that have just pulled out premium or mid-grade. So there's a variety of things and differences in equipment that can be worked with.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it just makes sense, instead of putting in tanks. I served on a petroleum company board for over 20 years. It just makes sense, instead of putting in a tank and new pumps and everything, you just take the label off of one and fill it with the 85. Especially if it's only 5-6% of your sales. But I would suspect that, as we're seeing now, it's really the cooperatives that are doing this in a few isolated cases of others. And I think when you pull up, as most of us do, you pull up to one of the bigger franchisees, C-stores or stations, you've got maybe 12 pumps out there. They could sell mid-grade and the rest of them and put an E85 pump in, and I would think that would be an avenue that we would want to explore pretty vigorously with the major franchise holders. And I have a question again. What percentage of the say, 4,000 stations in the state of Minnesota are operated by the major franchises that require a 3-grade?
Mr. Krugman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, they're not operated by them. They are contractually supply. That would be in the area of 60 to 70% would be my speculation. That would be speculation of spinning out the company-owned, some of the, and the off-branded that come across the top of my head, and some of the cooperative stations.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Erdahl had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Davids, or for any of your testifiers, I've known people to do silly things like putting diesel fuel in a regular gas tank. It still does run, but anyway. What is the effect of putting E85 into a regular gas tank?
Mr. Gerloff, your chairman, representative. The good news is it's not like putting gasoline or switching gasoline and diesel. The easiest answer that we give clerks is never tell anyone that it's okay to do that, because gasoline engines are not designed for E85. However, if someone misfuels with a few gallons, it will function. We instruct them to dilute it with gasoline at their earliest opportunity. I think that the number one line of defense against something like that occurring accidentally, now we know there's plenty of people that do it purposely, is to mark up that dispenser properly. Nozzle pockers, pump poppers, decals, hang tags on the nozzle, to make it very clear that this is not gasoline, it's not diesel fuel.
Representative Ertl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If someone were to keep doing it intentionally, you know, long range, what does it do? What would it do to the engine?
Mr. Gerloff,
Representative, I personally know of several people that do that, and they claim that it, in some blend, will work fine. However, I am a bit concerned about long-term fuel pumps, injectors, and things that sensors that might fail over time.
Representative Davis, do you want to?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Ertl, I can't tell you what happens if you keep doing the 85, but I can tell you what happens if you take diesel fuel from the farm and put it in your personal vehicle and get caught. Not from me, that from some constituents. That's not pretty.
Thank you.
Representative Finnis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is for the author, Representative Davis. I think, and I'll be corrected if I'm wrong, I think that the state has one bulk tank for E85 for our state fleet. And I don't recall the size. I don't think it was 2,000-gallon bulk tank. I don't think it was even that big. And I know this isn't addressing that. It's addressing service stations, and that's great. Any thoughts on where we go? I don't think all the members of our committee or this committee realize that our state fleet has one bulk tank of E85, and yet we're supposed to be going to E85 vehicles on the state fleet. You know, I don't know if we have to mandate on ourselves or what. Do you have any thoughts on how this can be accomplished? Because bulk tanks can range, you know, pretty small, 300 gallons, to pretty big. So even if it's a remote area, you know, they might buy some in bulk.
Representative Davis, you want me to take a crack at this?
Sure.
I think one of the things we, Representative Davis, bill, the good thing about it is it'll make more pumps available. I think now the DNR, that we went to the fleet system, we used to have bulk tanks around at all the separate little forestry stations, but they went away from that, the underground tanks and the bulk tanks, put us on a credit card system. So we need more pumps around, because if we want, say, like the people in Norfolk to drive to an E85 pump, would have to go to International Falls, 70 miles away. Or maybe Bemidji, the other way, 40 miles. So the more pumps we have around would help, I think, more use by the DNR, because right now the miles they'd have to drive to an E85 pump would take away the benefit of putting E85 in. So that's why this bill was a good idea. We'd spread the pumps around. Representative Davis, and then Representative Junkie had a question.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Pennis, I would say in the Ag Committee, I believe it was, where we had... I think it was the Ag Committee. Representative Junkie's done some research on state fleets and how much they use, and I think Chairman Cornish's explanation is very, very good also, where a lot of it's on the credit cards now. They need to go to the stations, but there's still a lot of state agencies that do have the bulk tanks, and it begs the question, why aren't more of them using E85? And maybe I could defer to Representative Junkie, who's done a lot of research on this issue.
Well, again, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a comment to Representative Pennis. What we need to do buy is big blaze orange stickers to stick on the dash of the cars and say, this is an E85 vehicle. Please pull into an E85 pump. Because literally, they're all over the state except your area of the state, and we hope this bill adds some. But they're just not pulling in. And when they do, we've seen state cars fueling in a station that has E85 pumps, and they're at the regular pump. So, I mean, it's simply a matter of education. I don't know that it's bulk tanks. It's just driving down the road a few blocks to the nearest Holiday station, usually in the Twin Cities, and they have an E85 pump. And on the credit card system, they can do it. The other thing they have to do, I talked to my AFSCME folks last night. We got to talking about ethanol and the vehicles. Out of my regional treatment center, they said, yeah, we just got two brand-new Chevy Impalas that are non-E85. Just got them. Brand-new cars. So even though we're still direct that they move to E85 vehicles in the state fleet, they're still, these are leased vehicles. They're paying, by the way, $562 a month to lease a Chevy Impala, and it's not E85. So we've got some work to do with our state fleets yet, Representative Pennis, but I don't think, the bulk tank may be a good idea to fill what we have, but I think buying blaze orange stickers and putting them right on the dash so they can see it might help with these little maps.
Okay, any more questions or comments? Representative Davids, any more testifiers?
Not that I'm aware of, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davids, anything you'd like to add in the end your address your bill?
Well, I appreciate Mr. Chairman and members the committee's time. I think this is a very important step to increase use of E85 to try and make that 20% mandate that hopefully will be signed into law this year. And I'd certainly be open to some of the ideas. I think some very good ideas that Representative Junkie, Representative Wagenius, and others have had that I'll be open to take a look at those.
Thank you, Representative Davids. And then if there's nobody to testify for or against the bill, we'll hold this bill over at House File 1306 for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members, and to Representative Magnus' ideas also. We'd certainly be open to looking further at those. Thank you.
Okay. You have an idea?
Representative Simpson. Representative Simpson, you have House File 1038, Beaver Damage Control. Do you have any amendments? Or?
Mr. Chairman, at this time, no, I do not.
I want you to move your bill. Chair will move your bill for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill, and go ahead with your testimony.
Okay, thank you, Chair O'Cornish, and top of the morning to the committee. This bill was brought to me by one of my senator friends and asked if I would carry it over here in the House. And basically what it does is it reinstates the Beaver Damage Control Grant Program under the Board of Water and Soil Resources, regulating the grant amount and awarding the grants to joint powers boards, specifying certain reporting requirements to grants, recipients, and Bowser, and appropriating money to Bowser for the grants. This was a bill that was in place from about 1994 until the year 2003. At that time, it was, because of budgeting restraints, it was defunded and then taken off the books. What this will do is reinstate the program and appropriate money for it. The Board of Water and Soil Resources shall establish a beaver control grant program to provide grants for the control of beaver activities. The amount is $50,000 in fiscal year 06 and $50,000 in fiscal year 07. Doing a little background study on this, I've lived in a rural area all my life, and I know beaver are a real problem, especially with the township roads and a lot of our county roads. So doing some background check, I was quite surprised to see that beaver are a member of the rodent family, so basically they're big rats. And they weigh up to 75 pounds. They have an average litter of 3 to 4 kits a year. And they're family orientated. They'll stay in an area until they overpopulate the area. Then they'll force their own out and move on to another area and start another damming situation because they have to have backup water to survive. So that's basically the gist of it. I have had support from the townships on this. And beyond that, I'm open for questions, I guess.
Representative Simpson, on line 14, may include Indian tribal governments. When this, maybe somebody at the DNR could answer if you can't, the previous program, did it have that language in there? And it's kind of vague. Was that closed reservations like Red Lake and then open like Leech Lake or...
Mr. Chair, I'd have to ask somebody from, if there's anybody here from the DNR that could answer that.
Mr. Chair and members, Ed Bogus with the DNR Division of Fish and Wildlife, and as you know, Mr. Chairman, many years ago, the DNR used to do a beaver control program through the Division of Enforcement, and there was some money appropriated specifically to the DNR for that program. That program was eliminated, I think, in 1991. And this program that we're discussing today replaced that. This program was housed in the Department of Agriculture and used general fund money. And so it was not a DNR program. It was not Game and Fish Fund money. And this is a sort of a long-winded way of saying I'm not sure what that program included when it was administered by the Department of Agriculture. I know it included county governments. I don't know if it included tribal governments.
Thank you, Mr. Barnes. I can get the question answered later. I appreciate it. Questions, Representative Arguinas.
Yes, with Mr. Bogus up there, it's a good opportunity to ask him. I was going to ask Representative Simpson, but do either of you know why the beaver population is growing so fast right now?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Arguinas, the beaver population grew pretty rapidly during the 70s, 80s, and into the 90s. It seems to more stabilized now. There's more beaver problems in some areas because we've had a period of high water for the last 15 years or so. We haven't had a drought since the late 80s. We thought we were due for one, and we've had indications or starts of droughts, but we've still had above normal precipitation, and so that's kind of exacerbated some of the beaver problems that we've been seeing. But we don't see evidence that the population is continuing to grow. There was a recovery period for beaver populations because they were eliminated with settlement and exploitation, and so actually up until the 70s we limited the number that trappers could take in a year. They had to tag everyone they took because the population was still in recovery. Earlier than that we actually relocated problem beavers so that they wouldn't be being killed because there was, we thought, a scarcity of beavers. And it's been a very successful restoration program. There's now plenty of beavers and they've successfully repopulated, obviously, the entire state where there's suitable habitat, but they seem to be stabilizing now.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Simpson, could you maybe describe to me a little bit better as to what a beaver damage control program is? Is it, you know, $50,000 worth of dynamite, or what? What is this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, in some people's minds that would probably be true, but as I understand, this will be set up so that townships and counties have to go through their supervisors, and people have to apply to them for the grant program, and then the grants will be dispersed through a joint powers board. So I think the money is pretty well established so that we don't have that type of approach to it. It's more for a control basis. So. Mm-hmm.
Representative Osmond.
Mr. Chair and Representative Simpson, I'm really kind of serious. So what activity will the counties be promoting? How do they really control the beaver?
Okay. Thank you. Basically what is being done is where they have problem spots, they will hire professional trappers to go out and trap these beaver and try and control them. They're not out trying to eliminate the population. They're trying to eliminate the problem where they have it. And we have a lot of townships where we have culverts going through these roads and the beaver just continually backing those things up. And it's very costly to continually be going out there, taking backhoes, digging these things out. So the dollars would be used towards professional people going out, professional trappers, and doing the trapping.
the way it used to be operated, and maybe it will again, I don't know, with Couchiching County, they had money that was distributed, and the county board worked out a program with the county engineer. The county engineer sent forms out to the conservation officers, and they would be the front man or woman, and the trapper would get $10 a tail and bring it in and present the tails to the conservation officer. Conservation officers sign off the form, and then that person would take it into the county engineer, and then they would pay him or her the fee. I have no idea if that's how it's going to work in this area, but any other questions, Representative Junkie?
Thank you. To the witness or to the DNR or whoever knows, I remember the days here a few years ago. I think it was Representative Finstead or Finseth and Representative Holston were committee chairs of both finance divisions in Ag and Environment, and Representative Osmond probably remembers this too, and Hackworth, we were sending bills back and forth on beaver control because no one wanted to fund them in their bill because of the shortages of money. Has Bowser ever had this money? I guess that's my question. Why we're putting it in Bowser now as opposed to the DNR or as opposed to the Ag Department. Is Bowser willing to administer this program if they had it before? Is this historically... I mean, I'm just wondering if we're putting it in the right... If we find the money, if we're putting it in the right budget.
As I understand, they are willing to. I guess I haven't heard otherwise.
Should we have Mr. Wyrens come up and... Yeah, from Bowser and asked her the question.
Yeah, he's here.
Will you identify yourself for the record and give us your comment?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dave Wyrens with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. The issue of this program being run by Bowser is certainly we can do that. The comments that we've made to Representative Simpson are ones of the cost of writing this program. There's no recognition that there will be a cost to Bowser to operate this program, to make the grants and perform the functions as identified in here. Have had a brief conversation with the Department of Agriculture when they were responsible for this program, and it was not an unsubstantial program to operate for them. And those same costs would be imposed upon the board if this program was recreated and given to us to operate.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Johnson.
Just to follow up, then, do you have someone on the on Bowser on the board to administer this, or do you have to? I mean, does someone have to go out and get? I mean, again, I'm asking, will this money be better just given to agriculture again, where they actually probably still have the person that administered them and understands the program? They probably have the paperwork in the drawer somewhere. I mean, how much of a gear up is it for you to do this? Are you comfortable doing that? Or I mean, literally, should we be looking to put it back somewhere else?
Mr. Wyrens.
Mr. Chair, I think the concern that that we would raise are the reductions that have been made to Bowser over the past two bienniums and the lean staffing we currently employ. At the end of the day, there's only so much work that different people can do during the course of time, and this would be competing for the time of our people that we have, including myself for that matter. The people, the grant people we have at Bowser, have to find a way to make them fit this in with their other responsibilities. So that'd be the concern that we would have, is how do we make this work well, make sure the funds are spent appropriately and efficiently in line with the responsibilities that we have.
Representative Junkie, follow up.
So, Mr. Chair, and to the author, and I think Representative Osmond, is this, if we decide to fund this, I mean, we oversee all these budgets. I'm starting to think it's better off back in agriculture or DNR, where they may have more resources than the limited Bowser personnel over there to put this money in and have them administer it like they have in the past. We should really consider that seriously, I think. And Representative Simpson, I know, is...
Yeah. To that point, I'm certainly open to that, and I don't want to see... we're asking for $50,000 a year here. I don't want to see it go back into bureaucracy and get ate up somewhere, so... We want to, this is money we need out in the field, so it's not that much money, so let's not do anything foolish by tying it up somewhere.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chair Cornish. One of the reasons I signed on this bill is because it used to be that out in the field that the conservation officers would come out and help with beaver control by literally blowing up dams, and then people eradicated the beaver as they, especially in the winter, they would come through the ice trying to get out from underneath the falling ice, and this was a partnership. But now there's a real constraint on the DNR. It's nearly impossible to get a DNR officer out and do beaver dam control. And so some element, it does a tremendous amount of damage. I got lots of beaver. I got probably way more beaver in one county than we got constituents. And they do wreak havoc. And so that's the reason I signed on this. And I was thinking, actually, Representative Simpson and Mr. Chair, that there could be a training element as well in this bill, that what we could do is, with some of the money, is buy tapes of Caddyshack, and we could pass those out to people. They would then understand, here, little gopher. And it would be the...
For the members' edification, the reason the DNR got out of it was liability. The conservation officers all were issued the galvanometers, mini blasters, big cords, and we were going out and blasting beaver dams, taking the ends off of culverts, washing out roads. I think one of my complaints was $12,000 because I blew the wrong dam and it washed a guy's complete yard away with his footbridge. And it was I think my only complaint letter I got on file was I blew a beaver dam once, and we had the road blocked and mud, and the things came down on the road, and the woman drove up and the electric window went down in this fancy car, and she said, "Are those poor beaver going to die?" And I said, "I certainly hope so." I was covered. I was covered with mud, and I think about a month later, the commissioner received a letter for my cavalier attitude, but I was under stress at the time. Representative Bill.
He should have the movie right then. On a more serious note, I do want to follow up on what Representative Cornish said, that you know, it was a great partnership because the conservation officers were really helpful. But this water thing, I mean, the tsunami is, of course, obviously not beaver, but water is really powerful. And give you an example, some people on a eradicated a beaver dam down in Representative Rukavina's district, and without knowing it, 3 or 4 miles away, they washed out the grade of the DWP railroad, and the train came in the night and drove into the hole, and the train derailed because someone miles away had blown up a beaver dam, and so it needs to be washed out the grade from all that water flowing. And so we really do need to have some eye on the ball on some kind of a program or some kind of assistance. The tape's a lot of fun to watch. You could have the conservation officer could have VCRs in their truck.
Any other questions? The representative of Tennessee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you would know the answer to this. What fund does repairing that damage to the environment come from?
I think that Representative Pennis said we had we probably paid for a few ends of the culverts. Once you get up to the culvert and you have these big culverts, and one time a warden went in and it's this big culvert was 6 feet high, and the rocket scientist that he got in and was wiggling the dam and it came out and washed him right out the end of the culvert. So he thought he'd get smart. Next time he put the dynamite in there with a long cord and got out, and then he blew 4 feet off the end of the culvert and got a bill from the county, and after that we just got away from culverts. So Representative Wagenius.
And I'm sitting here thinking that, are you all assuming that the only way to control beaver is to blow them up? I mean, I thought...
No, but it's the most fun.
I was assuming this was a trapping bill. And I have... and I'm really getting an education here. But what Representative Simpson is bringing forth, I mean, trapping beaver is not a particularly expensive proposition. Probably, I don't know if any of the rest of you guys have hired a trapper in the last year, but I have. And it's not a particularly expensive proposition. So blowing them up, and then I'm thinking it's just like, and maybe it's a great idea up in your area, but in Representative Simpson's area, I think this is not cool. I mean, so is your intention for trapping or blowing?
My Representative Wagenius, my intentions are for controlling the problem, and I think trapping will control the problem. So hopefully we can keep the dynamite at a very limited use.
One more story. We're talking about this. Another time that we paid a little bill, federal forester taught me how to use ammonium nitrate.
Yeah.
The low analysis fertilizer that's so bad now. This is when you can still get a hold of it. And we went out and he took an ice cream pail and we put in a bleeder dam and you put and then you soak it with fuel oil. And then you put the dynamite on top of that. He blew this beaver dam out pretty good. So one day I got this beaver dam and I thought, well, if an ice cream pail will do it, why not 50 pounds? So I lugged out 50 pounds, made a slit in the top of the bag, poured the fuel oil in there, set the dynamite on. My kid was with me 200 yards back. And when that thing went off, it knocked two trees down, a mushroom cloud came up, and the guy come out of the house 300 yards away. And I'd moved his pump house off the foundation that far and knocked six pictures off the wall onto his wife's head. And he was not a one happy camper, but the beaver dam was gone. In fact, there was a 7-foot crater where it used to be.
Now we know why you're in the legislature.
Yeah. Shortly after that, the DNR removed any responsibility of beaver dam.
We are appreciative to the voters in your district for saving the DNR a lot of money.
Representative Wagenius, now you know why we don't want to trap them. Representative Bill.
Well, I do think that this is a trapping bill, as Representative Simpson said, but I don't want it to be lost that what we're laughing about is a good control measure. Because one of the best control measures up in the north is to allow the beaver dam to freeze over about 3-4 inches of ice, then take out the dam, the ice lowers, and then the beaver come up through the ice because they're trapped, because they have to have water underneath, and then essentially the wolves and the coyotes get the beaver, because when they're on top of the ice,
it's worse.
Well, I'm just telling you, that's in practicality, that's what happens. So those who love timber wolves should love beaver dam control. Because they get a free meal out of the deal. But it does, it works. And that's how it happens. The beaver come up and they get eaten.
Does that comfort you any, Representative? Are we digging a deeper hole?
I was just looking for the wise expenditure of money. And I listened to your stories, and I'm thinking, this is a wise expenditure of money? But maybe if we went to trapping and knowing that the cost of trapping is like not very much, we might be better off there.
I think so. Well, Representative Osment, and then Representative Vertel.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wondered if you have any idea on what the statute of limitations is on some of your answers.
I was thinking about that as the tape was rolling.
Can you mention the word federal?
Representative Vertel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd speculate the reason that more trapping isn't being done is that the price is low. Does anyone know what a flue of beaver pelt goes for now?
No.
How prime are they?
Very little. And the problem is that up north, it's not like down here where you drive up and get out in the county ditch. I mean, sometimes you put the pack in your back, go way back into the forest, and literally hundreds of thousands of dollars of timber is lost each year up in all those public lands as well as the private lands of flooding. The huge lakes of water behind the dam can take a forester's wish of getting any timber completely gone. Representative Simpson, any last comments before we hold your bill over for inclusion?
At this time, no. I would just like to thank the committee for letting me present this, and this is the first bill I've had in front of this committee, and I'm certainly going to be looking for some more, because it's certainly an enlightening group to be in front of. I would ask that you hold it over, please.
Thank you, Representative Simpson, and if there's no more questions, we'll hold House File 1038 over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Finance Bill.
Thank you.
We don't need to. Representative Erickson, House File 1291. If you you have any amendments and you want me to move your bill?
Mr. Chair and committee, Mr. Chair, I would appreciate very much your moving 1291 for possible inclusion in your omnibus bill.
Okay, we'll move House File 1291 for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, this bill, which does not have, as you notice, an appropriation listed, because I certainly would like to find, be creative and find some money without having to impose on someone's budget. I don't think the DNR has any funds they can share with me, but we can be creative in thinking about that. So let me focus on the reason this bill is before us. Minnesota's floodplain maps, members, are outdated. 50% of the floodplains are more than 20 years old. That is the maps, the floodplain maps. I know that because I happen to live on a floodplain, or almost. My backyard is in the floodplain. Furthermore, the maps were delineated using topographic base maps with contour intervals of 10 feet, except in the flat Red River of the North Basin where I grew up, where the contour intervals were 5 feet. The status of the flood maps and the lack of high-resolution elevation data pose some great difficulties on a daily basis for counties and cities that are charged with implementing floodplain regulations. So here today, we have this bill in front of us. And Mr. Chair, I was incorrect in the amendment process. I would like to delete my own county of Sherburne. So in line 12 of the bill, if I could ask you to offer an oral amendment to delete Sherburne.
Well, the chair would move to amend the...
Oh, Mr. Chair, yeah. I understand Carver also needs to be deleted.
On line...
So that would be line 11, the first county listed as Carver, and line 12, the last county listed as Sherburne. Those both should be deleted, for I think the counties have taken care of the high-resolution digital elevation.
Okay, Chair would move to remove on House File 1291, line 11, the word Carver, and on line 12, the word Sherburne. We already have that. You need an amendment on that?
Yep.
Okay, you understand the amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. And with that, I will turn to DNR Waters Obeysulam to talk about the need for this bill.
Is it Obi, your first name?
Obeysulam. Mr. Chairman and members.
I don't know if you remember me, but I've this would be the third time I've seen your presentation. You've been doing this for some time, haven't you?
More than 2 years. Mr. Chairman, I'm deferring to Dave Claypool, who is going to make the presentation, and then I will have some comments at the end.
Before you do, if I could ask a question, Representative Erickson, have you approached the LCMR, or what's the track history of the funding requests for this project?
Mr. Chair, I think Obi should refer to that.
We did. I think it was 2 years ago, but the magnitude of the funding needed is too far great for LCMR to fund it, and we were rejected right away.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is David Claypool. I'm in Ramsey County Surveyor, and I'm here today representing Max, and we have 18 partners total. We're one of those partners. Our partners are AMC, federal, and state organizations, and so on, and you do have a copy of that with you. And as a member of this organization, we have an interest in the fact that with 1291 would allow us to do some work that needs to be done very badly. We have a definition of what a DEM actually is, also in your packet. And what a DEM really is, it's a representation of the surface of the Earth that we can reproduce and use and utilize. And I think I'm going to talk just a second about why it's really important in addition to what Representative Erickson said. Not only are these maps that you have more than 20 years old, half of them, but half of them don't even have elevation data on them. And half of them don't even have 100-year flood elevation on them. In addition, the method to collect this kind of data nowadays that works the best and would be the cheapest is what we call LIDAR. You have an explanation of LIDAR also as one of your handouts. And it's a plane that is flown at a certain elevation with a laser beam shooting at predetermined points on the ground, generally acquired by aerial imaging methods as airborne laser surveys. Now, LIDAR, as it's known, can produce vertical accuracy to 1 foot, which means you can do 2 foot contours. It also has a plus or minus 2 foot horizontal accuracy. Now, we always talk about the vertical, but let's talk for just a second about the horizontal. The horizontal accuracy of the maps that you're using now may give you 5 foot or 10 foot contours, but the horizontal accuracy may be off by 100 feet. As a surveyor for the last 35 years, I did a lot of work up north. And we were putting in subdivisions and floodplains. It was obvious there were floodplains, but if you use the floodplain maps, they were okay. Now, as the Ramsey County surveyor, I get calls from the people that live on top of the bluff that have to go out and get a $2,000 or $3,000 survey to prove that they're not in the floodplain, because not because of the vertical accuracy, but because horizontally they show up in the floodplain. This happens on a regular basis. It's used for our situation is that it's used for it can be used for a lot of things, not just the floodplain, and so we want to go beyond that. In fact, we have a platform from AMC here today that talks about their environmental and natural resources. And we're on the back under GIS floodplain mapping. But I took a quick glance at this platform just a few minutes ago. There are 9 titles on this platform that would be directly benefit from the use of LIDAR. Not just ours, but 9, a total of 9. The other thing is that Obi will help us with, because he works with FEMA all the time in a couple of minutes, is this business of leveraging money and working together with them under a partnership and so on and so forth. We've already mentioned the fact that we have great savings when people do, if you've got good mapping, you don't have to get surveyor to survey your lot to prove that you're up on top of the bluff. It gives you an efficient, accurate rating and processing of flood insurance, accurate wetland delineation for no-loss requirements, accurate forest biomass inventories, increased precision in the methods of planning for roads, infrastructure, and utilities, and more precise soil mapping and improved contour. Now, we have talked to people who tell us that they can save on the farm 50% in nutrients just by knowing, having that better kind of mapping. I grew up in the northern woods on a small farm. I also went trapping with a professional trapper, and at the age of about 12, caught a beaver by the tail and never picked him up with the teeth facing out. But the point, I guess, I'm trying to make is I'm familiar with the issues that surround this, and there's a lot of things going on here that we can help. We have a proposal here to do a pilot. We need the data. FEMA, Obi's going to talk to you about how FEMA is going to map Minnesota anyway and make it digitally available. But it will be from the old data. It won't be from new data unless the state of Minnesota or a county would provide it. And we have several counties that have provided some of that. That shows up on your pilot map that you have there. And some of the counties that already have it are the green-lined counties. And by the way, I will also state that the governor has signed a property technical agreement with FEMA that would allow DNR to front the activities associated with this funding from FEMA. That's basically already in place if we could get the funding to go with it. recommendations that we have will be for the best for the state of Minnesota to invest in developing a statewide high-resolution digital elevation model. We have, I believe, after we amended, we have 18 counties that would participate in the pilot. And we would, I think Bobby's going to go further into detail, but $7.3 million to do that. And we're really looking overall at a $5 to $10 million per biennium for statewide payment of this to do that with mapping what we need to do. I'm going to turn it over to Obi at this point if there's no questions of me.
Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, my name is Obi Sium. I am with the Minnesota DNR Division of Waters. I'm the supervisor of the floodplain management program. Along with what David said, FEMA has embarked in modernizing what they call modernizing the floodplain management maps. And they started with fiscal year 2004, and they're going to go, according to their plan, through fiscal year 2008. They have already spent, are going to spend with the 2005 fiscal year, over $5 million, and by the time they are done with 2008 fiscal year, they will be spending over $15 million modernizing the floodplain maps in Minnesota. But the problem is they are just simply converting the bad hard copy maps and making them digital. They're not improving the data. And if we had this proposal to do a high resolution digital elevation model, then we would have better maps that are workable. And of course, like David mentioned, the value of this digital elevation model will be just tremendous for every other activity. So we have a problem, like it would say that the maps are not accurate. Half 50% of them don't have ground elevation on them, and they don't have the 100-year elevation on them. And so if somebody wants to do something on a floodplain, they have to spend money to gather the data to be able to build their home. One particular example I like to cite is the main stem of the Red River of the North, where after the flood of 97, FEMA and the state and the Corps of Engineers, we conducted the hydrologic study. We determined what the 100-year flood is, and then we also did the hydraulic study, so we know how high the water is going to be, but we have not been able to map it because we don't have a high-resolution digital elevation model to do it. The existing data won't do it. So here we have an example of the main stem all the way from Moorhead to the Canadian border that we are not able to map without this data. Also, in the last 2 years, I have been working with FEMA, and they know the value of this data. If we get this data, we will get more than what they have projected. We will get more than $15 million to update and modernize the maps. And to that end, they have given us, we haven't received the money yet, but I think they said we will get it by June, in a couple of months. They have given us $500,000 to start the high-resolution collection of the high-resolution digital elevation model, and we pre-negotiated with them to do Norman County in the problem area in Red River of the North. So hopefully we are started with that process already. We will be starting late this year, late fall or early spring when the conditions are good for doing the LIDAR data collection. With that, thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Claypool or Mr. Seam, this is going to be real beneficial for the counties and cities and anybody with high resolution digital elevation, and not just for floodplain, but for, I suppose, for economic development or planning roads or this or that. What have the counties put in? Is the AMC trying to get money from each of the counties that affected? If it's going to be such a good deal, what have they put in so far, the counties? I mean, is there a talk about each one of them donating so much to the cause? Or?
Yeah, well, this data is so important that already six counties in the metro area have, they can't wait for us, they can't wait for the state to do it. So they've gone ahead and collected the data themselves. In Dakota County, for example, when FEMA came with a proposal to update the maps, What they did is Dakota County had its own capability to do the maps that should have been done by FEMA. So the county did that, and then FEMA collected the high-resolution digital elevation model, and so that county is taken care of. The greater Minnesota counties are not going to be able to do it, I think, and that's why the state needs to do it. The metro counties, already 5-6 of them are doing it. I don't know if I have answered the question.
Mr. Chair, if I might say, there's a huge benefit here also that would help you outstate in terms of some of these issues that you talked about. I understand the beaver issue, but I'm going to use it as an example. One of the things that happens once you gather this LIDAR, you use it for orthophotography control. If you have that data available, you can first buy. If you don't have it, you aren't going to get very accurate photography. If you do, you get an excellent photography like we have in Ramsey, where we have 6-inch pixel resolution. We could see a beaver standing on top of his dam, and we could measure its length. Okay? Now, if we were to be able to get this LIDAR as a basis, it reduces the amount of cost on photography for orthophotography per contract from many tens of thousands down to $6,000 to $8,000. And an example of that is Goodhue County. So there's huge savings under practical application without even going into all of the mapping that has to do. So there's all these issues that are benefited by that.
Representative here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. Of course, probably the reason I'm carrying this bill is I represent Benton, Mille Lacs, Morrison, and of course Sherburne too. And Crowing is right next door, as is Isanti, and I was born in Norman County. But I'm going to do a little research, and I will let Marilyn Brick know if I can find some money someplace that might assist with this, because I know that, for me to come and ask for money is unheard of. I don't usually do that. This is only the second appropriation bill I've ever had in my career as a legislator. But I see the benefit of this, and I wonder if we can form some partnerships. So if you would work with me, committee, and if you know of any other resources, I will certainly begin my search. I'm pretty good at finding creative ways to help us finance important projects. So, Mr. Chair, I just want to lower your level of anxiety a bit.
Representative Osmond and then Representative Pennis.
Thank you. And, Mr. CM, I believe that the looking through the materials, it appears as though to do the full program, we're talking about $80 million.
To do the LIDAR alone, the topographic map we're talking about, is less than $40 million now. Because of the counties that have done it. The other $40 million is for floodplain mapping, the actual mapping, and FEMA would do that.
Okay.
But the total program, yes, is $80 million about.
Okay, and then underneath this pilot area that you're talking about here, that's for this proposal, you're looking at $3.65
million? Yes, $7.3 million for the green and the red counties, 18 counties.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Osmond, we probably, certainly could consider breaking those out and keeping the red separate from the green, probably determined by priority, so that, this pilot project doesn't have to be rolled into one priority, so that, this pilot project doesn't have to be rolled into one.
Yeah. Representative Osmond.
One other question. Is there a reason for calling this a pilot project? I mean, the pilot project indicates it's kind of just beginning. This looks to me like a full-grown program. So
I think we say it's pilot because we started with a statewide, all 87 counties, and we knew 2 years ago the money wasn't there to do it. So we pared it down to these 18 counties now. Last year, 2 years ago, was about 21 counties, and really, there's no real reason to call it a pilot.
Okay. Representative Osmond.
And one last question. In the governor's office, what's the administration's position on this program?
It's not in the governor's, Mr. Chair and member, it's not in the governor's budget. What we have is 18 organizations, as you have in your handout, working together for the last 3 years trying to promote this, because it's such a good idea, but it's not in the governor's budget, so the DNR is not promoting it, but they are supportive of the efforts that the data would be good.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. Mr. Chair, if you would be so kind as to consider another oral amendment, I'd like to delete the word pilot. I've thought about this for a while, but this bill, I have to confess, was not my number one priority this session, so I've been working on some other issues and haven't spent enough time on this. But I think we should stop calling this a pilot. It's not appropriate for pilot, okay. And I hope that the DNR would agree, yes, that we have to stop fooling people. Representative Osmond made a very good point. This is a project. It's no longer experimental. It's no longer something we're trying out. It is something that needs to be done eventually, and our challenge right now is to find the dollars to do it. So as I said earlier, I will try to find some way to help out. Maybe we can't accomplish it now, but I'll keep working on it.
Chairman would move to, can I do it again? Do strike the word pilot in the preamble or the paragraph above the explanation and on line 10, the word pilot. Understand the amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure who could answer this, but when we look at the DEM, scratch the word pilot area map here, when I look at the colored counties, the green striped counties that are kind of south, a little bit west, and mostly east of Hennepin County, says DEM completed by county. Does that mean that the county pays for that themselves? And I apologize if I missed this. Do they get reimbursed by FEMA or the DNR or anybody?
Mr. Claypool.
Mr. Chair and members, there are individual cooperative technical partnerships with FEMA and some of the counties, so they get some funding from FEMA for it directly. And others have taken it upon themselves to do it themselves. We did ours ourselves. And we did it so we could be able to do these other functions if we needed to do.
Thank you.
I skipped over Representative Pennis before. Did you have a question?
Thank you. I deferred to Hoppe.
Representative
Hoppe. To Representative Hoppe's point, I believe that when this was experimental or we were just getting into GIS programs back in the 90s, I think that there was some LCMR dollars as well as federal dollars that went to Dakota County to try and develop that whole GIS process. I could be wrong, but I think there was some state involvement in the development of GIS.
Mr. Chair and Representative, GIS and this are two different things, actually. The GIS program is functioning probably separately and had the LCMR, and I did it early on, having the first GIS, county GIS in the state. We worked through all these things, and we did get some funding for GIS. I don't recall exactly how it went with Dakotas, but I do know they had some arrangement with FEMA. But Goodhue County was the first county to use LIDAR, and they also had some sort of an arrangement with FEMA, but I think they did most of this work on their own. I don't know that anybody get LCMR money to do this particularly.
Okay. Thank you. It's helpful.
Any more questions? If not, Representative Erickson, would you like to another comment?
No, Mr. Chair, I think I've said enough. Thank you very much for hearing this bill, and I will be in contact with Ms. Brick.
Okay, the hearing no more questions, the committee will hold House File 1291 as amended to be laid over for possible inclusion into the Omnibus Finance Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Kate.
Okay, if there's no other business before the committee, the meeting is adjourned.